everyone, and welcome to this Headache Pill podcast, the Patreon exclusive podcast, where I talk about additional materials that didn't make it into the Headache video. And for this one, this is a bit of a catch-up one. This is about Winnie the Pooh. Basically, once I finished the Winnie the Pooh video, I immediately rolled into the Woman in the Window video, and yeah, time got lost in between. So, unfortunately, I never finished my obligation to give you this podcast about Winnie the Pooh. So, here it is. Now, the angle I want to talk about with Winnie the Pooh was, I was going to, in a manner, talk about imaginary friends. Because there's this, I guess it was in relation to how Christopher Robin Milne gave away the toys and people felt that was unthinkable. But you know, he was an older man now, he just didn't need them anymore. And it sort of spoke to, I guess, the treatment kids have for imaginary friends. There's been several studies into imaginary friends. And it's not a sign of, like, you know, mental illness or psychosis or schizophrenia or, like, you know, any of this sort of stuff. It's not harmful at all. It's, in fact, very healthy to have an imaginary friend. And so, yeah, these studies, were very, very fascinating. There was no room to talk about this stuff in the Winnie the Pooh video. And in fact, it almost came up again when Tom Scar and I were working on the Barney video. We almost found an opportunity to be like, oh, I did some research into imaginary friends, and I thought maybe this could be a good place to talk about them here. But there wasn't room for there either. So basically, I have a bunch of information about imaginary friends and no home for it. So I'm going to share it with you. This might be shorter than most podcasts. I thought at the very least I can give a little treat, which is just about the nature of imaginary friends. So, like, yeah, obviously Christopher Milne, and like we've aided by his mum, sort of imbued life into his teddies, and so they had their personalities and their quirks and their voices, and this is part of the healthy rearing of a child's mind, because to encourage imagination and play, which is something I tapped into when I was talking about Bluey, is to sort of you're creating a means for your children to problem solve. You could invent scenarios, situations, and the kids will start to, like, work out how to get out of those situations. And this helps them, you know, become, like, decisive and sharp and witty. This, it's a very healthy thing to have imaginary friends. I don't think I ever really had an imaginary friend. I was kind of told to have one. I remember I did a class, and we were like, for this class, draw your imaginary friend. And I didn't have an imaginary friend, so I drew a ghost. But because I was a kid of the 80s, this ghost had a baseball cap on because he was a cool ghost. And I named him Ed because I don't know why I keep naming things Ed. Apparently it might be an autism thing to keep naming things after yourself, but it's not like an ego thing. It's not like an egotistical thing. I definitely see it as separate to me. Like Ed the cat from Potball, Ed Egg, and now Ed the ghost. And it's like, why do I keep naming these fucking things Ed? Why am I naming them after me? I don't know. But either way, I did. So Ed the Ghost was an imaginary friend I invented for the sake of having an imaginary friend, because I didn't have an imaginary friend. I scarcely had friends, let alone imaginary ones. So, this really wasn't super applicable to me. But, you know, the notion of imaginary friends is still very, very interesting. The point of it is that, you know, I mentioned that this is still... sometimes with imaginary friends, especially if you see kids talking to no one, it is often perceived as being a problem. you know, there's no one there, so they, you know, must be irrational and stuff like that. But children are fully aware that imaginary friends are not real. They don't pretend they are real. They know they're not. They are fully aware of that. There's a quote from Marjorie Taylor from the book Imaginary Companions and the Children Who Create Them. And it says, I consider children's ability to integrate the activities of imaginary beings into their everyday lives as additional evidence that young people are skilled negotiators of the boundary between fantasy and reality. So kids know they are very, very good at what is real and what is not. And usually it's like we impose imagination onto kids. So stuff like the Tooth Fairy, Father Christmas, the Easter Bunny, they can believe in ghost stories. They could believe in a fictional TV show being real. But this is not their imagination. They didn't make those things. This isn't from other people's imagination that is being imposed onto them. And so because of that, because they don't have the creative control over the fantasy that is being told to them, they can have difficulty determining what is real. So therefore, they know that imaginary friends are not real because they created them. But they don't know that imaginary things they are told about are not real because they didn't come up with that. And it's like, in fairness, it's not much different to like a script writer or a book author who creates characters for a story. You know, like part of one of the skills that Tom has brought me on board for when it comes to script writing, particularly with like character stuff, like Ed's World and Crash Zoom, was that I can have characters talk to each other in my mind. You know, if you can put your characters in a white room with nothing in it and they can still talk to each other, you know, you've got it. Tom struggled with that. So he called upon me to help him out with that problem. And obviously we've stuck together ever since. In a way, many characters you create for a script, for a book, for a story, they are your imaginary friends. You know, you're coming up with a character, you're giving them a voice, you are giving them a personality, and how they bounce off one another and stuff. It's the same as imaginary friends, you know? You're still you're still picturing fictional people, and in some regards, treating them as real, because they are to you. You know them. There's another quote from an article from Psychology Today by Eileen Kennedy Moore, which says, adult fiction writers often talk about their characters taking a life of their own, which may be an analogous, similar process to children's invisible friends. So, yeah, I can fully see and agree with that. There is no consistency to imaginary friends. They come in shapes, different shapes, sizes, ages, genders, species. They can be completely invisible as well, even to the child. But somehow the child knows where they are, what they look like, what they're doing. Or it could be represented by a prop. So you could use a stick, or a doll, or a stuffed toy like Winnie the Pooh, right? They could be a vessel for the imagination, but you know it's still a prop. It's not necessarily a figment in a nothingness in space. It is usually still an object that maybe has now been given a bit of a life and a bit of a personality, like a Muppet, I guess. There's some fascinating elements of imaginary friends, and like, yeah, how overwhelmingly normal it is. But at the same time, the as I mentioned, like, you know, with Christopher Mill, when he gave away the toys, people were horrified because he gave away the toys. And, like, again, this is, you know, they have a fantasy imbued onto them. This is his fantasy that he's in control of. And so he doesn't have that romanticism about it, right? Or didn't, past tense. He didn't have that romanticism about them. They were still objects. He knew they weren't real, right? We believe they were real because we were told the stories. And then we have an emotional, nostalgic, whichever, attachment to it. But he does not have that same thing. And so, in a way, his imaginary friends, like with all kids, they're disposable. It seems so cruel and unromantic and just like dark to think that, like, a child could have an imaginary friend and be, like, so dependent and emotionally attached to it, and then in the same breath instantly dump them and forget about them and move on with their lives. And this is still a healthy part of growing up. It's sad, but it's still very normal and healthy. Marjorie Taylor from the Imaginary Companions book I mentioned before said that children do not seem to mourn the passing of imaginary companions. This point underlines the I should have looked up how to say this word. Utilitarian nature of friends. They tend to be abandoned when they've outlived their usefulness. So yes, basically, children create imaginary friends to fulfill a purpose, and it could be for a multitude of reasons. It's just, there's no one else to play with, or it's just part of whatever game they're currently doing at the time. It doesn't matter why they're created, but they are created. And then when the purpose is fulfilled, they are forgotten about. And it's, yeah, it does seem sad, but it's just, that's, you know, they were there to fulfill a purpose, and they fulfilled it. Mission success. Let's go home, boys. And so, alas, the children don't need their imaginary friends anymore. So, yeah, that's basically it. As I said, this was a short one. Just wanted to share some of those thoughts about imaginary friends. I thought it was very fascinating. That would have been maybe a paragraph, maybe even a whole sentence of the Winnie the Pooh video, but I just decided to cut it because it was too much of a sidetrack. I'm not really talking about imaginary friends. And, you know, I think imaginary friends are a very fascinating topic. Who knows? I could easily imagine myself visiting this topic again in a future video. I don't know what video. You know, say I want to do a video like, say, like Calvin and Hobbes. Like, inevitably, I'm going to be talking about the nature of imaginary friends. And I'll be very, very easily be able to pull up this information again and look into it even further and develop it and, like, you know, have more to say on the subject. But, yeah, that's basically it. This came up to my radar because Marjorie Taylor has specifically talked about Winnie the Pooh and the fact that Christopher Milne gave him away and said that, like, yes, this is because they fulfilled the purpose they were there to fulfill. So, that's how it came on my radar, and again, developed it a little bit more for Barney. So, like, yeah, you know, Barney's another prop. He's another prop that kids use to be the agent of their imagination. So it is very it's very common. So I'm sure there'll be more to say on this subject in the future. But yeah, as I said, this was just a little one. Just wanted to share some thoughts on imaginary friends. So thank you very much for listening to this podcast, and I'll see you again next time. Bye bye.